Operation Marxist Stop Trump. Socialist billionaire Soros joins forces with Dem Party and Sanders as MoveOn.org ends Chicago rally, planning next attacks. We've reached the point where foreign-born billionaire George Soros now believes he can directly influence the outcome of the race with his MoveOn.org. But should this leftist billionaire, even if naturalized, be allowed to use his money and groups to foment violence against a presidential candidate? Why should he even have a say in what we do in our elections here? Would Obama have even been elected without Soros in 2008, 2012? Meanwhile, as the man who bum-rushed Trump in Chicago turns out to be not simply a former child actor, but a Bernie backer, well, of course, Bernie claims innocence. Moreover, they are now fundraising for Soros's MoveOn.org on this and are planning more protests. You really can't make this stuff up. Another troubling development, it appears at least two of, if not all three, remaining GOP candidates are contemplating refusing to support the 2016 Republican candidate. So what's sauce for the goose is not sauce for the gander? Here, the GOP reveals its full-throated hypocrisy by demanding Trump not go third party and then trying to isolate and gore him to death, no pun intended. Unfortunately for the billion or for the Lilliputians, the tiny tots who tangle with Trump, they are like chihuahuas gnawing on his ankles, neither fit for president nor vice president, but simply jokes. Meanwhile, again, the amount of weird and uncanny weather is reaching a new high as record amounts of rain beyond 24 inches fell in Louisiana over the last few days, and as 12-month records for East Texas were shattered, now entire towns are being evacuated. Now, who will evacuate all the stranded buffoons and bimbos and imbeciles from the GOP headquarters? It's not clear if anyone in the has the IQ in higher headquarters to achieve such a feat. Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning, it's Kelly. I just can't believe this race that's going on. I mean, you heard about this guy that ran up to the stage when Trump was giving this speech in Chicago, and I don't even know where it was, if it was in Chicago or. Now I'm confused. They shut down a rally in Chicago, and then in another rally there was a guy that ran up that they had to tackle. But this guy turned out to be so bizarre, a former child star or a former child actor who is now in college as an actor, in an acting program. And I really don't understand this stuff. So the part that I really don't understand is that George Soros gets to use his money to undermine democracy in America. And with the full knowledge of Bernie and Hillary and the whole Democratic campaign, and probably with the blessing of the GOP, for all I know, it's just crazy out there. And it really makes you wonder if we're going to make it as a country, if this type of thing can just go on. And where are the people that are calling for George Soros to be blocked from America? I mean, he owns property here. The guy's worth somewhere between $20 and $30 billion. And I honestly don't get it. I don't understand why guy is allowed to come in. He funds organizations that do things to undermine the political process, but he can get away with it. He can do anything that he wants. But, you know, in the meantime, our borders are open and people are pouring in. And I've been thinking about this the last couple of days, a country that can't even react when the borders are left open and all kinds of craziness is going on. I don't see how we can make it as a nation. I really don't. Thomas DiMassimo, 22, was arrested for disorderly conduct and inducing panic after rushing the stage at Donald Trump's rally in Ohio. Before attending the rally, he tweeted about his plans to disrupt the event. He helped lead an anti-racism protest in April 2015, studying as a junior at Wright State University. He's part of the Black Lives Matter, although he is a white, you know, he's a white guy, and I'm sure that he would give you a lecture on the terrors of whiteness. Really, you know what? The Democratic Party should be standing up and denouncing this guy, and they're not. I don't know. I really hope that we turn things around here. It's just really starting to. It's so alarming. I mean, to have somebody like the president in office for so long, and I don't get it. I really don't. I don't get it. And the kind of stuff that he's gotten away with. And now they're attacking Trump because they're afraid that Trump is going to be like Obama. I don't know. I mean, it just, how do you with any credibility whatsoever, do you attack Trump under the idea that he's a potential dictator when we've already got a dictator in office right now? I don't know. I'm not usually pessimistic, but I felt very pessimistic after this. They're allowing this foreign-born billionaire to undermine and possibly overturn elections in America. I mean, this guy should be banned from America. There should be an arrest warrant out for him. I mean, if you tried that in Mexico, you would be in jail so fast. But anyway, there is just a lot going on out there. We do have record rains, and there's entire towns. As a matter of fact, there's a large portion Louisiana that is underwater, and you know, the funny thing is Louisiana is already a swamp, so I mean, we'll see how this turns out, but and entire Texas towns as well. So I do have a clip on that for you, but those people need your prayer. I'm looking at a picture right now on the Weather Channel of a train bridge, one of those kind of classic old metal train bridges, that is completely submerged. Sabine River that they're especially concerned about, but the high amounts of rain are done, but it's days after the rain that the peak river, and the rivers were 50 to 90 feet over the norm, if you can believe that. All right, here we go from the Weather Channel. Texas town surrounded by floodwaters.
This is the Sabine River, and it has risen to more than 29 feet at Duval, Texas, completely isolating this small town of about 1,200 residents. Access to the town has been completely cut off. Mandatory evacuations have been in place all weekend long. As of this morning, water has crept into the town by about 2 blocks. The police station is expected to be entirely covered by today. It's not done yet. This river is still rising, and by Tuesday, it's expected to be over 35 feet. Now, this all comes from the rainstorm that we saw last week. Upwards of 18 inches of rain had fallen over the Sabine Basin last week due to that storm system that lingered in the area for 5 days.
And there was in Shreveport, I believe it was 24 inches. And then there was another town, I think, in Texas. Shreveport, Louisiana had more than 24 inches. And over this other town in Texas. Anyway, so So Fort Lewis in Texas is 27 inches over its norm for the last 12 months. And Dallas is, I think, 23 inches over norm. So we're talking about places that have been hit by storm after storm. Here's a little bit more on the Sabine River.
Here's a scene this weekend in Louisiana with the rivers rising. This has become a major concern, and it's not only Louisiana, it's in Texas and Mississippi as well. Sabine River, that crested this weekend. We've seen a historic crest here, and the rising's not over yet. So it has become a river watch now for these three states as we go into next week. This has all come from the rain that we've seen last week. More than 24 inches in some cases fallen in a short period of time in less than a week. So it is a major concern for the river in Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi. Deweyville has already crested. That will continue to rise. We've seen record cresting so far in seven locations, with more to come.
So, and they also had, although I don't see anything about tornadoes, they had a severe tornado warning over the weekend. And so, anyway, that's just an incredible amount of water that they've got over there. And it was coming in as they were basically, as they were reporting on this stuff, they also had mentioned that there was a extreme tornado warning that was also put out there. So things are they're pretty bad, and I'm looking for, I think I've got something, here we go. All right, I've got a little bit of something that I saved on my own page. Sometimes these weather stories just disappear within hours, you know, the nature of weather. But I've got one more story here on California, which there's so many stories about Louisiana and Texas that you can barely find this, but California has had inches and inches of rain in some place, up to a foot at a time, I think. And I think they got 5 feet of snow over the weekend.
A strong cold front packing winds of up to 70 miles per hour did that. Turned a tractor trailer over on its side in Tacoma, Washington yesterday. Snow has been coming down with this system, and eventually it is going to lead to much cooler air across much of the country. But here we'll start with the snow. We do have snow out to the west, so we're going to see that come in along with some heavy rain right along the coast today into Tuesday. So places like Aspen, Salt Lake City, you're going to pick up some snowfall. Behind this system, though, it does lead to cooler air. So much of the country seeing above average temperatures, well, that changes by the end of the week. The cooler air rides in along with this system, and we'll see temperatures drop pretty significantly by this weekend.
Now, it doesn't even mention this because they actually put another story in there, but there was just a tremendous amount of water that has fallen over California and up to Washington and Seattle. From what I understand, Seattle is had rain every day since February the 25th, and there's a, you know, they were so drought stricken up in California that they some of these lakes that they use for irrigation and for water, you know, a human water use, some of these lakes were down to, you know, 75%, 80%, 90% down. Now my sister was telling me yesterday that there's a lake up there that is so full that they had to start opening the floodgates. Here we go.
As for Thursday, unfortunately, a lot of that rain is going to be in the same spots where it's been raining, down in the south, where we've already had flooding problems, parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas. Be prepared. More rain is on the way, and still that chance for some severe weather, and the rain's actually going to be.
All right, so that is, I think that's from last Thursday. Anyway, let's take a break here and come back and talk about this story in which the Democratic Party, it would appear, at the direction of George Soros, has happened so many times in the last few decades, the Democratic Party led into further and further far leftism by people like George Soros is now fundraising to create riot conditions at Trump rallies so that they can prove that his hateful rhetoric is supposedly causing this. In the meantime, this is all, what do you call it, AstroTurf? It's fake reactions from the ground that are paid for by George Soros. I mean, this guy is a menace to world democracy, and he should be in prison somewhere. Anyway, Keith Emerson of Emerson, Lake & Palmer died over the weekend. Unfortunately, self-inflicted gunshot wound, but he's considered to be by some the greatest rock pianist in history. Here's a little bit of Emerson, Lake & Palmer. 622 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. And I think, let me check here. Nope, grab the wrong phone. I don't have the texter right now. We'll be right back, though. 523-1450 to call in. All right, so I'm still trying to get my head around the fact that George Soros is funding these people that are disrupting the Trump rallies. In the meantime, of course, all of the you can tell who a real leftist is as soon as something like this happens. They say like this George Ramos or whatever, this guy from Univision comes on and says, "What do you expect? Can anybody be surprised?" His rhetoric. So, I mean, the sad thing about America today is people can't even put the pieces together. They can't even connect the dots. This stuff is happening out in the open. Nobody's covering it on a major channel. Maybe Fox is. I haven't even looked over there, but I don't see that anybody has a clip on it. And you've got people who are paid for by an international billionaire who is a Marxist. As far as I can tell, George Soros is a Marxist. And he has funded and he tried to overthrow the election of George W. Bush. He's got all these organizations out there that he pours tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into yearly. And these are all meant to upend democracy. So why isn't there a law against somebody like this? I'm really serious. I have watched this guy with increasing amounts of alarm and just bafflement and astonishment since he's been around and since I've, you know, first found out about him. And nobody seems to do anything to this guy. And by the way, it is true that when he was a kid, he was 12 years old, I think. He worked with someone. He was living in Hungary when the Nazis were coming to take away the Jews to the concentration camps. He helped to confiscate their goods, filled wagons full of the goods of these people and profited off that. And he says it's the best time in his life. That is his favorite memory. So anyway, here's on Tommy DiMassimo, interviewed over Trump attack. I wanted to take the podium away from him. Former child actor. I mean, this... check it out.
Howard, and he's opportunistic, and he's willing to destroy this country for power for himself.
Right, well, that's your motivation.
But what were you thinking at that moment?
Why did you do what you did?
I was thinking that I could get up on stage and take his podium away from him and take his mic away from him and send a message to all people out in the country who wouldn't consider themselves racist, who wouldn't consider themselves approving of what type of violence Donald Trump is allowing at his rallies, and send them a message that we can be strong, we can find our strength, and we can stand up against Donald Trump and against this new wave he's ushering in of truly just violent white supremacist ideas.
Were you, if you had made it to that stage, were you going to attack him?
No, not at all. And there would have been no point. Donald Trump is 6'3". I'm 5'9", maybe. You know, he's a giant man surrounded by thousands of followers, 12 Secret Service, and a former Ohio State offensive lineman. That would have accomplished nothing.
Can you see how people might have perceived that you...
Of course. And I wasn't expecting there to be as much Secret Service as there was there that day. From what I had sort of seen, there hadn't been that much or hadn't been that much in a contained area. So I thought my chances of getting up on stage and getting to the podium would have been better. But again, it was more important for me to show that there are people out there who aren't afraid of Donald Trump. He says scary things. He lets his people do scary things. He's threatened Mexico, Islam, you name it. And yet I'm unafraid. And if I can be unafraid enough to go take his podium away from him, then we all can be afraid enough to not let this man walk into the White House.
All right, so this is Mr. Black Lives Matter. I mean, these people think that they've got the right. And you see this time and time again. One of the hallmarks of leftism on campuses is they think that they have the right to decide who gets free speech. They are going to be the arbiters of free speech and who gets to stand up and give their ideas. And I have seen this happen so many times where people come in and shut down a conference. They begin to protest speakers till the speakers just give up, chanting and screaming things because they personally don't agree with the message. That is the most dangerous thing, that these people think that one person or a small group of people gets to decide who is allowed to have free speech. And this guy was going to go up to Donald Trump and try to take his mic away like they did to George Soros when those co-ed black girls came in wherever he was at in Seattle and took his mic away. And of course, Sanders, being a big pansy, just kind of shrugged and walked away. Anyway, we'll take a break here. 6:32 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We ought to all be very alarmed by these people who are going to be personal arbiters and decision makers on who gets to have the Bill of Rights. 523-1450. We'll be right back on the Kelly O'Connell Show. And it is the 14th of March.
The modest and things I miss, but don't be unkind. It don't mean I'm blind. But I did a thing or two. I think of lying in bed. I shouldn't have said. But there it is.
It is 6:37. Today is the 14th of March, and temperature outside, temperature is 50 degrees. Anyway, still kind of trying to put all the pieces together on this, but I think that we all understand that what is happening here is they're trying to take democracy away in the name of saving democracy, which is usually how it works. You've got these people that were part of this group of 17 individuals who were running for president, and everybody got together, we're going to support the party, and they ask everybody to take the pledge, right? Didn't everybody have to take that pledge? We will support the final nominee, and they asked the one person by person, and the Donald finally said, okay, I'll support the nominee. And now that he's going to probably be the nominee, now you've got Rubio saying that he can't support him. You've got Kasich, who presents himself as a moderate person, saying that he's not going to support him. What in the world is going on here? And I mean, would it be worth it to destroy the party to save the party? I was texting Pete last night, and he had said something along the lines of, I should actually try to find the text here, but he and I were talking about this, here we go. I texted him. I've never seen anyone ganged up more than Trump. And he says, I mean, you have to accept some people honestly believe he would be a disaster. And I said, yeah, but does that really justify the response? Pardon me. And he says, yes, it does. If you really believe a single politician will destroy your country, then yes. So anything can be done in the name of that, right? I mean, couldn't people go after Obama? He's destroying our country. It doesn't matter if what we do is legal or not, as long as we get him out of office. And I said to him, the GOP is committing Harry Caray, like a doctor shooting his patient to save him from cancer. That's ridiculous. And that's my thoughts. Where was the GOP fighting to save the country and save the party two election cycles ago when Obama was getting elected and they were putting up these crappy candidates? Where was the outrage? Where was the we'll do anything under the sun? And, you know, so many of the things that the party is doing right now are either unethical or, in my opinion, even illegal. And what it's communicating to the grassroots, to the Joe and Jane members of the GOP, to the average people on the street who support conservatism, is that the party has lost its mind, that they think that they not only have a duty, but they have a right to go and take Trump out of this, even if they use unfair or illegal tactics. Is he really that bad? I mean, calling somebody Hitler doesn't make them a Hitler. All right, here is a little bit from the Donald on this attempt. And this is what they're going to try to do, because the handwriting's already on the wall. They're going to try to take every Trump rally and turn it into a bloody brawl, or at least, you know, try to shut it down and then blame it on his rhetoric, because they're already doing that. Check this out.
Speech. Meanwhile, we've got Mr. Trump joining us now live here on Fox and Friends in the wake of everything that happened last night in Chicago. Mr. Trump, nice to have you here on the show once again.
Thank you.
You know, some dust has been settling this morning, and some of your GOP rivals have spoken out, the likes of Governor Kasich and Senator Ted Cruz, saying the buck stops at the top, and that your campaign speeches, your rhetoric over the past few months has emboldened protests like this. What do you say to Senator Cruz and Governor Kasich this morning?
Well, they only wish they hit this chord. The people of this country are tired and they're angry. They're angry at incompetent government. They're angry at deals like the Iran deal, where we give away $150 billion to a terrorist nation. They're angry that our military is being depleted and we can't even beat ISIS. They're angry at so many different levels, and they're angry at trade, and they're angry, maybe angriest of all, that our jobs are being sucked out of our country. They're being taken out like we're a bunch of babies, and they're being moved over to China and Japan and Mexico, which is becoming the new China, and nobody does anything about it. And they're angry at the fact that they haven't had a pay increase essentially in 12 years, the middle class. So there's a lot of anger. They're not angry people, but they're angry about the way our country is run.
Mr. Trump,
and Ted Cruz doesn't get it. And by the way, Kasich doesn't get it. Kasich spends all his time outside of Ohio campaigning to run for president, and he's got no victories whatsoever. He hasn't won anything.
Well, Mr. Trump, you know, I think you're speaking to your supporters who are angry about that. You're tapping into that anger. But then the anger from the protesters that were there, they weren't saying, give me a job or give me higher wages. They were saying, stop the hate speech, shut down Donald Trump. What do you say to that?
Well, let me just tell you, that was not a protest that was just happened to be a beautiful, lovely protest. That was totally organized by Move On, or one of these groups that are not good groups. These are not good groups for the country. All of the signs were professionally made. You could see that. Everybody came at one time. We had 25,000 people signed up. We had thousands of great people. These are amazing people, great people. We have great people at the rallies. And we had 25,000 people coming. And that's another thing with the people that I'm competing against. A guy like Kasich, nobody shows up to his rallies. Nobody goes. You look at Ted Cruz, nobody goes to his rallies. Nobody cares. So, you know, these are massive rallies. And actually, we've had very, very little. We've had virtually no, you know, if you think in terms of protesters, we've had so few protesters at these rallies compared to the size of the rallies themselves. We've had no injuries, no problems until yesterday when we had this one. This one was a total setup, and it was organized by a group and professionally organized. And what they're really doing is they're shutting down the First Amendment. And I think I made a very wise decision. We've actually been given a lot of credit for it, because it would have been actually easier to go, and you would have had clashes, people would have been very badly hurt or worse. And so I decided to shut it down. And it's very unfair to the 25,000 people that were lining up to get in. It's very, very unfair.
For hours. To that point, Mr. Trump, about what was the thought behind shutting the rally down, there are reports now that this enormous group of disruptors inside was planning to jump a barrier and rush the stage once you took the stage. Did you know about that? And does that concern you?
No, I didn't know about that. I didn't know about that. I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, we have plenty of strength on our side. You know, I remember when Bernie Sanders was taken over by two women, where they went up and they started screaming in his microphone while he was talking. And he just moved to the back and left. And that was the end of that. And I thought that was a great embarrassment. When I watched that, I said, that's never going to happen. One thing, we go down fighting. And that would never happen. So, you know, if a thing like that, if an incident like that took place, I wouldn't be surprised, because this is a radical group of people. This is a bad group of people, for the most part. A lot of people that were troublemakers. And I'll tell you what, and you have to understand that our rallies are massive and they're very, very friendly. There's tremendous love in the room. Tremendous love in the room.
So this is so childish that they're trying to take over and shut this guy down. And so I was talking to my sister last night, and I said, why would Soros go after Trump when supposedly the dream candidate for Hillary is Trump? I mean, why would you try to knock him out at the last minute? She said, I don't know. And I said, well, started to think about it. And it's because they're trying to poison his brand so that when he gets to the general election, Hillary can stand up there and yell. You know, she doesn't give speeches. She screams at people about how terrible Trump is and how he incites violence. At the same time, this is the classic move of the left, to go up and punch somebody in the face, and when they swing back, claim that this person is fighting with you. You know, somebody says, why, what's your problem with this? Well, this guy swung at me. You know, you don't mention that you punched him in the face first. The left is so devious and so full of tricks, and the reason is because that's all they have. All they have is tricks, because they're a minority of a minority. True leftism is a tiny minority. The only way they ever get ahead in life is by tricking people. All right, 6:47, we'll take a break here, and I've got some weather for you. Kelly O'Connell, 6:47, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. Get your opinion on the record. We'll be right back.
Yeah. you see it's all clear. You are meant to be here from the beginning.
All right, so I was texting back and forth with Pete, and I told him that I said basically that it was the Bernie Sanders supporters who went and shut down this debate, and I said it was the leftists, and so he said, oh, yeah, I always blame it on the left. And I said, no, I'm serious. And so anyway, he was giving me a lecture, and then I took a picture of my bookcase and sent it to him. I have a bookcase just dedicated to communism and Marxism stuff, and I just basically kind of a roundabout way of suggesting that he do a little bit of research. But all right, so here is what I found immediately after that: how Bernie Sanders supporters shut down Donald Trump's rally in Chicago. This is the news of the day, and I'm amazed it's not bigger.
There's violent scenes emerging at Donald Trump campaign rallies on Friday night. Pure chaos after Trump canceled his appearance in Chicago. In a moment, we'll speak to former GOP presidential candidate Carly Fiorina, but let's start with NBC's Hallie Jackson in Dayton, Ohio, where a Trump rally will be happening a little bit later today. Hallie, good morning.
Hey there, Craig. Good morning. And right now, all indications are that rally will move forward. You can see people have been lining up. Some got here at 1 a.m. for Donald Trump's first event since canceling that rally in Chicago. That's where five people were arrested. Trump now tweeting this morning about, quote, the organized group of people, many of them thugs, who shut down our First Amendment rights in Chicago, saying they've totally energized America. Pandemonium in a crowd packed with protesters, days of rising tension reaching a boiling point.
Tonight's rally will be postponed until another day.
The chaos in Chicago spilling out into the streets. Police physically separating Trump's protesters from his supporters. One arguing with demonstrators, raising her hand in a salute. Elsewhere, cameras captured a bloodied police officer. Trump on MSNBC explaining why he called off the event.
I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I think it was the right thing to do under the circumstances.
How are they going to react to these pictures when they go to vote?
Two people told me that are experts say this increases the vote for Trump.
His campaign says it postponed the rally after meeting with law enforcement, but Chicago police point to the 100 extra officers who'd been called in.
We were confident that we had the proper amount of resources dedicated to the event, and we relayed that information to Mr. Trump and the campaign office.
Trump did not cancel a rally earlier in the day in St. Louis, interrupted repeatedly by demonstrators there. One led away bloody. 32 people arrested.
Well, I certainly don't incite violence, and I don't condone violence.
But just last month,
like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Trump facing fire for his comments to protesters, a regular presence at his rallies, his rivals now arguing he's the one who should set the tone.
There's only one presidential.
All right, so it was Bernie Sanders, obviously, if you're a Trump supporter, you can't defend him saying he wants to punch people in the face. In his defense, he claims that he was responding to someone who came in and was throwing punches at his people. So here's Bernie Sanders responding to the idea that his thugs are coming out to disrupt. Why is Bernie Sanders involved in this? And he's not even ahead. He's got his work cut out for him already. And he's, you know, like usual, this stuff never really adds up. But check this out. Bernie Sanders on Trump being a liar.
As I said, he's doubled down with a new tweet this morning. I want to get your response. He says,
Bernie Sanders is lying when he says his disruptors aren't told to go to my events. Be careful, Bernie, or my supporters will go to yours. Your response?
Well, I think anybody who understands Mr. Trump's campaign knows that he tells the truth very, very rarely. And I'm afraid that on this occasion, he's lying again. First of all, he calls me a communist. Obviously, that's a lie. Then he says that our campaign is organizing disruptions of his rallies. That's a lie. George, we have millions of supporters out there, and clearly some of them were at that rally along with many, many other protesters. But to say that we organized that, totally untrue. Mr. Trump, I think, is getting very nervous. He is catching on to the fact that...
All right, so somebody is telling these people to go to these, you know, somebody's micromanaging it. I would be shocked if there wasn't somebody in the Bernie Sanders organization who wasn't behind this, but obviously George Soros is where... Well, here's George Soros claiming Donald Trump and Ted Cruz doing the work of ISIS, at which point, and this is a Bloomberg World Economic Forum, people begin to openly laugh at him. Check this out.
How worried are you by the popularity of Donald Trump?
Well, Donald Trump is doing the work of ISIS. ISIS and before that Al-Qaeda discovered the Achilles heel of Western civilization, the fear of death. And when it interferes with reason and people do things out of fear, which is actually harmful. And that's what by fear mongering, Donald Trump and the others, Cruz and so on, are doing the work of ISIS. I actually listened to the debates, and it's a very simple message. I found it difficult to resist it. I was, you know, it's because it's so elemental.
It's difficult for him to resist, probably because he's got a Nazi background. The guy literally helped go and take people, help find Jewish people and take away their stuff while they were being let off to Dachau and Auschwitz and stuff. And they asked him about it later, and he said it was my favorite time of my life. And they challenged him on it. How could that be your favorite time? And he says, I didn't do anything. It wasn't my fault. They were going to do it whether I was there or not. That's the kind of person he is. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, take a break on the hour. I got a lot of stories coming on the other side. And seeing, okay. So I got some great stories for you on the border and also porn. I have a little porn story. So we'll be right back. 6:59 on the hour. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450.
Maybe I might have changed. Not been so cruel. Not being such a fool. Whatever was done is done. I just can't recall. It doesn't matter at all.
Well, it's 7:06, 50 degrees outside. It's the 14th of March. And I told you about this kid. I told you about this kid that ran out and he tried to get to the stage. Now, he was in a, here's the article to look up. Daily Mail, I spat in my hand before I shook yours. Protester arrested for Trump stage assault reveals how he met an unsuspecting Donald at the beginning of a Ohio event. And he was, as a kid, in minor roles on the House of Pain in Reno 911. As a child, he's in his fourth year studying acting. So, you know, needless to say, actors are, generally speaking, a lot of times, no shock, very, very far left people. Who knows what would have happened if he had got to him. He claimed they did an interview and they claimed that he claimed that he wasn't going to do anything to Trump, but. You know, the there's a picture of him doing a protest standing on the American flag at his university. But Donald Trump is claiming the guy's associated with ISIS because someone put up what looked to be a spoof video of this guy around there. But there is this notion that you have to shut down free speech to save free speech, which is sick, you know. And this whole thing is the person behind it. This is the most transparently obvious direction that these guys are heading in. Is you take the fact that Trump said things that individuals, that Trump says certain things that a certain percentage of the population doesn't agree with or find to be insensitive. These days, political correctness, it doesn't take much. And then some, you know, Trump says some things that he shouldn't have said. Such and such person should be punched in the face and I'll defend him. Now, having said that, his statements during a speech didn't cause a melee, didn't cause a fight. What happened is these people show up, these Bernie Sanders supporters who were far leftists, and You have to study the far left and see what tactics they used, but you have to understand that the far left is guided by a group of people who Karl Marx referred to as the vanguard of the proletariat. And what Karl Marx believed is that you have to have leadership from basically university people, because people that are, you know, people with degrees and people basically educated people, because the masses don't really understand how to protect their rights. They don't understand how to do the things that they need to do. So the vanguard of the proletariat is a cliche. It's a way of saying, you know, the educated leadership, what we call the elites. And they're going to give leadership to that. And then when they take over the country, there's going to be, believe it or not, a tyranny of the proletariat. In other words, this vanguard, these elites, in our country, the Ivy Leaguers are going to come in and run everything, and of course run everything into the ground and destroy everything if they got their hands on it, which they've kind of halfway done already. So this guy comes out of the Black Lives Matter movement. And he's a U.S. he protests against American policy and such. He rushes the podium, bum rushes it. He's lucky. He is lucky that he didn't get beat down or even somebody put a bullet into him, one of these security guards. I mean, you know, if you rush somebody, if you run up and try to get on the stage with somebody, nobody knows if you've got a gun, if you've got a knife or whatever. There's no way with a crowd that big that you could vet all of the people for weapons. So there was a claim that he'd had a knife. Another picture showed a lump in his pocket. And they said, is this a gun? And it could have been just that he was happy to see Trump, if you know what I mean. But anyway, all right. So switching gears here, Glenn Beck, you know, we've had a little bit of a Glenn Beck watch here. I've been absolutely fascinated with some of the stuff that that Beck has been up to. Beck has compared Trump to Hitler. Beck is heavily invested in Cruz, but now here he's saying, and I've told you this, I've been tracking this. Glenn Beck is presenting himself as a prophet for the nation. It is so uncanny, but check this out. He's saying there's going to be an eternal price to pay, a heavy eternal price to pay if you vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Check it out. And this is in his own studio.
Awesome responsibility. If we are the generation that loses those rights, we're going to pay a heavy price, a very heavy eternal price, because we were the ones that said, I know the Republic is at stake. I know that we're in trouble, and I'm not going to face my maker. And this is why I'm out on the road all the time. I'm not going to face my maker if I drop dead and have him go, hey, by the way, remember those crazy rights? You were alive then, weren't you? What did you do? Who did you vote for? I don't know what to do, Richard. I don't know how to answer that. But I can't in all good conscience say, well, because I really thought Donald Trump would protect them. Or I really thought Hillary Clinton would protect them. I know neither of them will. I know neither of them will. And I don't think the Lord is the kind of guy who says, well, we'll go a little evil.
This is so hilarious. Okay, so I've been trying to figure out Glenn Beck, and I mean, you know, I put on a Glenn Beck thing, and, you know, the Glenn Beck is on the station and everything, and people, I think, got a little bit of cheesed off at me. You know, Glenn Beck's a good guy and everything, and I find Glenn Beck absolutely compelling to listen to. There's literally nobody better on the radio to listen to. He's just so gifted. He's just has the whole package. But I was trying to figure out why would he? I mean, you know, as a talk show host or whatever he is, there is something to be gained by being independent, because once you attach, you know, once you hit your wagon to a star, so to speak, then you have immediately alienated a whole bunch of people. And in this case, he's going after a person who is in the minority of support, whether he's the right guy for the presidency or not, just putting that aside, Mr. Cruz. Glenn Beck has tied himself to this guy. And I was trying to figure out, and I think I found something here. There's this clip called Glenn Beck Has Another Huge Meltdown. That's the name of the clip anyway, if you want to look it up on YouTube. But I was trying to figure out why would Glenn Beck take the risk of alienating all of these Trump supporters? And I think this guy was saying, which I had mentioned before, is that his model is kind of in free fall right now. He came out and did something that was unprecedented. He put together a station. It gave internet TV is basically what he did. And they say that this model, for whatever reason, is cratering. But here is from this, and this is from Alex Jones. But anyway, I know you get pissed when I'm say anything that's critical of Beck, but I just kind of find it fascinating. Check this out.
You can see this with Drudge. You can see it with Breitbart.
All right. What he's saying here, let me backtrack this a little bit. People who go after Trump go down, and people that support Trump or give him a fair shot go up in the numbers.
Not aligned with the GOP establishment. Any website that has not relentlessly attacked Trump has seen its traffic and its popularity go through the roof. You can see this with Drudge. You can see it with Breitbart. You can see it with InfoWars. But the Blaze, Glenn Beck's website, went from attracting 29 million unique visitors per month back in November 2014 to a year later dropping to just 16.4 million unique visitors. Glenbeck.com also plunged from 4.4 million to 1.4 million unique visitors. And this is out of the Daily Beast. Basically, Glenn Beck's media empire is collapsing. They just had another CEO quit. Basically a revolving door. They've got managers all over the place stepping on each other's toes. And then,
well, and I was trying to figure out, it's like, maybe Beck is tied to Cruz because, I mean, I'm sure that he likes the guy and supports him and everything, and there's some religious connection there. Although I find it strange that Glenn Beck is repeatedly kind of presenting himself as a prophet. And, you know, if he got right down to it, I mean, if he got down to his theology, he believes in millions of gods. He believes this god has a plan, this planet has a god named Elohim, I believe that's his name. But that, you know, so when Glenn Beck dies, he believes that he's going to go in front of the god of this planet. And then if he gets the blessings, then he's going to become a god himself. And then he's going to get his own planet. And then he'll get to people that planet with the wives that he has in space, basically. I know it's a little bit hard to take in and everything, but I'm only bringing this up because this is a very, very weird time to be alive in America. And, you know, the prophet of America is Mormon. And, you know, the people that claim that they're fighting for democracy are actually doing everything that they can to undermine it on the GOP. And then the Democrats are running, are trying to shut down the opposing, you know, the opposing party's campaign speeches. And nobody is really standing up and saying anything. All right. I mentioned that Keith Emerson, who's regarded, rightly regarded as he was an absolute genius of a piano player. He was a prodigy as a child, considered by some to be the greatest rock pianist. He has got this clip. If you can look it up on YouTube, you'll get a kick out of it. It's called Keith Emerson's Flying Piano. There was something called the California Jam in the 1970s. Keith Emerson runs out in a white in a white outfit, jumps on a full grand piano, like a long grand piano, and, you know, adjusts something around his feet, and then the piano begins to rise, and Keith Emerson starts playing this piano, which begins to slowly rotate, and there's a spotlight on him. He's got the black piano, he's got this white outfit, and he starts playing this. It's absolutely spellbinding. It is probably the greatest piano performance I've ever seen in terms of just drama. Check this out. Kelly O'Connell, 7:19 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Unfortunately, Keith Emerson died over the weekend, so blew his brains out. Was trying to expand the capacity of his cranium. 523-1450. We'll be right back. And the California Jam had some incredible number of people, like 750,000 people at it. It was incredible. And so ELP, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer is probably the highlight. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. That's Jerry. Hey, you need to look up a thing called truthforaction.org.
What is it?
The new Black Panthers, and basically the new Black Panthers have declared war, and they're saying that they're not going to allow the blacks to be eliminated.
All right, hey, you want to say it on the Jerry? You want to say it on the air?
No, Dick Kelly, look it up and you can read it. I got to go feed my chickens.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye bye.
All right, so we've got this vote coming up, and we've got a vote coming up in Ohio and Florida. Donald Trump is about 20 points ahead in Florida. I really don't see how anybody can stop him in Florida. That's 99 more delegates. Now, having said that, there was a couple of delegation votes over the weekend. I think one was a caucus and the other one was a vote. But anyway, the delegation in Wyoming went for Cruz, and then Washington, D.C., unsurprisingly, went for Rubio, which I find pretty hilarious. He can only win in Washington, D.C. and in Puerto Rico. But you've got a situation now where even though Cruz won Wyoming, he only picked up, less than 10 delegates. So, you know, it's you're continually losing opportunities to do something about Trump. If Trump is the problem, the answer to Trump is increasingly looking like it's going to have to come from an outside group like George Soros, who says that Donald Trump is ISIS, which is sad to hear. I mean, George Soros is somebody that, in my opinion, should have been put in prison a long time ago. The kind of stuff that he gets up to, he's just out of his mind. There's a lot of concern as to what is going to happen in the GOP election process, and so. You know, it's just not clear what's going to happen here, but Ben Carson has, and we already went over this, I believe. Ben Carson has given his blessing to Trump, and how was he able to do it? And they said that before even the election started, that Ben Carson had come down and spoken at this prayer breakfast, which I think was down in Florida, and then Donald Trump. Mar-a-Lago is this place that he has down there. They had he and his wife over for dinner, and then Carson decides to buy a house down there, not too far from Trump, and so Trump would occasionally have him over to dinner. So they had a pre-existing friendship, and then anyway, here's a little clip from Carson on the protests and the writings of Saul Alinsky, which I think is pretty eye-opening.
Hi, friends. Good morning. It's Sunday, the 13th of March, 2016. I'm Hannah Koyman. Donald Trump is done with protesters.
We're going to take our country back from these people. We're going to take it back. These are bad, bad people.
But who is organizing these left-wing disruptors? Dr. Ben Carson, who just endorsed Donald Trump, here to react in moments.
And new details on the man who nearly tackled Donald Trump during yesterday's campaign rally in Ohio.
I know. Oh, oh, oh.
He's got a checkered past, and he's being accused of having ISIS ties. More on that coming up.
Drug dogs for hire, how moms and dads are using drug dogs to snoop on their kids. I'm not going to believe this. Fox and Friends Hour 3 starts right now.
Hey, everybody.
Good morning, everyone, on this daylight saving weekend. We hope you're resetting your clocks this morning. Welcome into Fox and Friends. Peter Ducey in this morning for Tucker. Nice to see you.
So we've learned if you run for office, that's going to be your campaign.
The only platform. I will end daylight saving time. That's my whole entire platform.
Tucker would get rid of the lottery. Now I just need to come up with mine and
Let's see. Dr. Ben Carson is joining us this morning, former presidential candidate. He just came out and threw his support behind Donald Trump. Nice to see you this morning.
Hi.
Sir, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And 1 hour, 1 hour time change there. We want to get your take on the things that have been unfolding over the past 3 days. Chicago, Kansas City, Dayton, Ohio. Here is some sound from Donald Trump in Kansas City last night as a rally was unfolding and protesters popping up and being escorted from the premises. Watch.
Now, here's another one. Here's another beauty. Get him out. Oh, Bernie. Bernie. It's another Bernie sign. Get out of here, Bernie. Out. That's a Bernie supporter, folks. Get the Bernie sign. What you put in here by Bernie? Oh, would I love to run against Bernie. I got plenty of time. I mean, we're in no rush. Anybody in a rush? We're in no rush. You know what, folks? We're going to take our country back from these people. We're going to take it back. These are bad, bad people. And we're going to take our country back from these people.
So, Dr. Carson, that was Mr. Trump. Then Bernie Sanders fired back, and he said Donald Trump needs to be loud and clear and tell his supporters that violence at rallies is not what America is about. He said, look, my supporters are not inciting violence, he says, and we're not organizing this. But Donald Trump has a responsibility to talk down all of this rhetoric. What do you say to Bernie Sanders this morning?
I say that the leaders in both parties should be speaking loudly against this. We're talking about the Constitution. We're talking about the Bill of Rights. We're talking about First Amendment rights. And, you know, if you read some of the left-leaning writings of people like Saul Alinsky, you understand exactly what they're doing. This is part of the plan. And we, all of us, Democrats and Republicans, should be appalled by this. You know, there's this feeling that the ends justifies the means. And if I'm right, I can do anything I want. You see this on college campuses all over the place. And they're not really teaching them, you know, about our Constitution and about the foundation of our freedom.
Dr. Carson, do the other GOP candidates have a responsibility to defend Donald Trump? I mean, what they've been saying coming out, Kasich has said that Trump is creating a toxic environment. Marco Rubio saying that he's creating this environment that's egging them on, creating like this powder keg type of environment. Do they need to be saying that, or is that an opportunity for them to try to win and prop up their own campaign?
The last thing we should be doing is encouraging these people who are trying to disrupt free speech. It really doesn't matter whether it's on the left or the right, although you don't really see this from the other side.
You don't see it from the people on the right for the most part, because that's not their value. People on the right, their value is to allow free speech, not stop it. I have been to so many events in the university system where, you know, people get up and try to shut things down. It's really astounding. And it's like, you know what, dude, you know, you're getting up and protesting. You're trying to shut down the right of this person to give a speech. What if you're wrong? And it doesn't matter, because they think the only thing that really is applicable is that they have a sincere intent. And as long as they do that, doesn't matter if they're right or wrong. 732 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523 1450. Here's a little more ELP. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to go your hair long.
All right, so I mentioned I was gonna cover something about porn that I thought was interesting. There is some articles out, and this one is from the Independent, UK Independent, from Wednesday, 21 October 2015. So just a few months ago, 1 in 3 women watch porn at least once a week, survey finds. And then another one, Daily Mail, UK. It's not just men who watch porn. Over half of women regularly watching sexy movies and a daring 40% admit to making their own. So although most people, and 9% admit to watching porn every day, most people would consider pornography to be a male bastion, male area of interest and I guess investment in time. Although it's hard to imagine what the investment, what the payoff of the investment is, but over half of women watch pornographic videos on their own. 9% watch every day. Women generally favor soft porn, 76% or role play, 47%. Most women, 96%, have watched with a partner and say it improves their intimacy. And all right, so there's also a question out there as to how porn has affected the millennials. The millennial generation rate is raised up. And one of the articles that I read had said that you're dealing with the first generation of people who the vast majority of them became aware of human sexuality to a large degree through pornography. And so what is missing in pornography is, you know, intimacy itself. It's the connection. It's the sensitivity between, you know, communication between the partners. It's just like two animals coming together. No pun intended, but that you've got a generation of people now who basically see sex as something that two people do together like animals. So how does that affect the attitude of people who are dating, who are looking for partners, and people who are looking for long-term relationships and who want to get married and that type of thing? How does that affect the relationship? And the article that I was reading, it's just said, you know, it's obviously at some level going to take away from the pleasure of the female, because the male approach is as seen in these works, is so, I guess you would say, excessive, over the top, but lacking in what you would normally associate with dating and the sympathy and the interplay between two people that are kind of on the same page. Now, from the Atlantic Monthly, most people think watching porn is morally wrong. March 6, 2014. And this article starts off saying all men look at porn, and but most people, the vast majority of people, say that they believe that watching pornography is wrong. So let me ask you this. And it says here in this article, most Americans simply don't approve of porn in any sense. Have we reached a point in the society where we are regularly doing something that we have no faith in, or we don't believe in? It sounds like it. If more than half the women out there admit to using it, it doesn't really break these numbers down, does it? I'm looking here to see if it says anything about. All right. Here's some statistics for you. 65% of people who look at it feel bad about it, guilty. 39% they oppose legal restrictions on pornography. So 40%. 29% consider it morally acceptable. So believe it shouldn't be restricted on the internet, but the millennial view is five times as likely to think watching is morally okay. So if 30%, okay, this doesn't quite add up. If 30% of the people believe it's morally acceptable, how could five times as many millennials, which would be 150% of people, in other words, all millennials think it's okay. 45% versus 9%. Democrats and Tea Partiers have similar attitudes about legal restrictions against porn. 41% and 40% believe that it should be legal. Now, Anyway, 523-1450. I've got a question out there. I mean, how do you think this has affected human interaction and dating? And I mean, if we used to see society as based on families, and the foundational unit of the family was, or the society was families. Now we tend to see individuals as the foundation. But obviously pornography is going to affect the way that people interact with one another and how they approach intimacy and everything. And so you've got, is it Tinder, this application that people use for, you know, hooking up and everything, is inconceivable 50 years ago. So the question would be, how has pornography affected the human race, the let's just say Americans, and is there any, if it's had a really negative effect, is there anything we could do about it? For example, would there be any support for banning it on the internet? I mean, can you imagine? And then there's another question there in my mind anyway, is like, what percentage of these people, I mean, if you knew the history of the people involved in it and found out that many of them were victims that were sexually abused or raped as kids, that some of them are actually being enslaved or being forced against their will to be involved in the industry, would that support your approach to it? I would think that it probably would. I mean, how could you not feel strongly about that? So here is I've got a little Jimmy J.J. Walker from Good Times, a little for you to lighten the day on the First Amendment. We'll be right back. 744 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450. If you have any strong opinions on porn or horror stories, feel free to call in. We'll be right back.
The Maury Povich Who's Your Daddy Baby Show. I love this show because that same chick is on every show. You know, she be sitting out there, show be starting, you know, she be out there. Here comes Maury Povich. All right, let's find out what's going on here. Okay, Aquanisha, tell us what's going on.
Well, Maury, me and my boyfriend, Verquan, we's gone out for like 4 months. All of a sudden, I got pregonia. And he tried to say the baby's not in the body. All right.
Well, we got Verquan back there. Let's see what Verquan's got to say. Yo! Maury! I call this chick Christmas, cause she's a ho. Now he's coming out. What the audience do? He's coming out. Here he comes. Who y'all think y'all is? Come on, if y'all want some of this here. All right. Everybody, take it easy. You know why? Because I got the results right here! All right. Verquan, Aquanisha, in the case of baby Hutu, Atu, La La Fala, Verquan, you are not the father. And he goes crazy, doesn't he? And she always runs to that little corner. They always have a little corner. Here comes Maury Povich. All right, Aquanisha, take it easy, because we're going to find a daddy baby.
and we gotta search all 50 states.
It is Kelly at 7:51, and we have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Chris.
Chris, hold on 1 second. Got another call. Thanks for the call. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. Yeah, go ahead, Chris. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to chime in on the topic with the porn.
Yeah, go ahead.
What's concerning is that, you know, it definitely does have a negative effect. The porn industry, if you look at the interviews or watch the interviews of those who have been in the industry, they'll describe like their experiences and how they just, you know, bear, you know, they'll take muscle relaxers, they'll take drugs, they'll try and find ways to support like drug addicts.
All right, so in other words, to get ready for porn, these women have to put themselves in an altered state.
That's correct. And, you know, it's a distortion of reality in that, yes, I mean, the way you put it is like two animals that are getting together. And so, the porn is like methamphetamine, you know, visual methamphetamine.
Huh.
It's just, you know, when you see it, you do your thing and you get the, you know, the dopamine fix on that.
Yeah.
The payoff. You know, it's just, you know,
well,
and so
clearly we've changed our views of sex. Do you think we got another call here? So I got to get to that, and we're almost out of time.
Sure.
But Chris, do you think that that pornography should be made illegal on the internet, because clearly anybody can get, you know, if the youngest child can find porn if they want.
Yeah, I mean, they try and do the safety features and everything, and, you know, it's laughable because, you know, it's good to know more about computers than we do.
Yes.
As grown-ups, and so they'll find ways about it. Making it illegal, I mean, we'll go back to, like, prohibition, I guess.
And, or, there'll be more porn, even more porn than it. Anything else, Chris?
No.
Thanks for the call. Great call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
Yeah, this is Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. Wow, it's been a while. How are things?
Okay. If you say Republicans are for free speech, reaching truths that way, you should actively try to get Thomas Robb on your show, who feels interracial marriages don't work. Thomas Robb, who may, though I'm not sure, thinks that on average those interracial marriages end up costing social services more, like for domestic violence calls, than same race marriages.
Jeff, do you believe that miscegenation, the mixing of races, is wrong?
Well, when I see it,
that's a yes or no question.
I have a bad reaction to it. I think it's natural for me to, when I see that, to wish that those different race people would split.
In other words, you think miscegenation, the mixing of races, is wrong, is immoral.
Yeah. Do you know who Thomas Robb is?
Is he local? Is he local?
Well, he was on KOA radio in Denver back in the 80s. Pastor Thomas Robb, he calls himself, of the Knights Party, which might be
he's
a
Aryan
plan, but
he's an Aryan. He's part of the Aryan Nation. If feel free to call him and tell him to call into my show. But anyway, Jeff, thanks for the call. I'm running out of time. Thanks for your Aryan viewpoint. All right, folks. Jeff has been lurking, waiting to call in. And, we got another call here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
Hey, I was actually just listening to your radio show, and I just wanted to say that it's pretty disgusting that people like Jeff are still out there and they're calling and talking about how interracial marriage is wrong.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that's not the viewpoint for most people out there.
Well, it's certainly not. The millennials don't even care about race anymore, it seems to me.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting that people like that actually still exist.
Well,
and that point is still around.
Yeah, get it out in the sunlight. The sunlight cures everything. Thanks a lot. All right, just briefly here. So there's this article, Rolling Stone Tales from the Millennial Sexual Revolution. I'm going to read just a couple of parts of this. I think you'll find it fascinating. March 31, 2014. This is how the article starts. By the end of their dinner at a small Italian restaurant in New York's West Village, Leah is getting antsy to part ways with her boyfriend, Ryan, so she can go meet up with her boyfriend, Jim. It's not that she means to be rude. It's just that Jim has been traveling for work, so it's been a while since she's seen him. Ryan gets this as her, quote, primary partner and the man with whom she lives. He is the recipient of most of Leah's attention, sexual and otherwise, but he understands her need to seek companionship from other quarters roughly one night a week. And this kind of fits in with the concubine conversation we had last week. All right, so here's the next section. In fact, Leah and Ryan are noticing a trend that's been on the radar of therapists and psychologists for several years now, termed the new monogamy in the journal Psychotherapy Networker. It's a type of polyamory, or that's where you have more than one sex partner, in which the goal is to have one long-standing relationship and a willingness to openly acknowledge that the long-standing relationship might not meet each partner's emotional and sexual needs for all time, or more specifically, that going outside the partnership for sex does not necessitate a forfeiture of it. What do you think of that? I mean, that's shocking, isn't it, to hear that, and yet there are increasing numbers of people, especially millennials, who are growing up in this world and wouldn't maybe see anything wrong with this. Now, this reminds me, we're unfortunately running out of time here, but Mike Savage had said a while back, this is a number of years ago, that the sexual theory in American practice is becoming more and more gay homosexual. There is a fact, if you study the statistics in the male homosexual world, but that by year three, the men, if they're together, if they become partners, they've either broken up or they have accepted third parties. And it seems like there's something about this which is true. Now, to what extent is this due to pornography? And to what extent is this from other ideas, maybe a loss of Christianity in the country? Or the maybe not even a loss of Christianity, but a loss of the importance and influence of the church. The sexual revolution has played a huge part in this, but are we going to be coming to a day where there are no prohibitions against, except maybe pedophilia, that people can do anything that they want and that nobody is going to look down on them? And marriage will be something as just another option. Well, it seems like we've already reached that part. Anyway, thanks for listening in. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I've really enjoyed spending time with you today. Great calls. And we'll meet back in 22 hours. Ciao.